From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Laugh. And today we have a talk by Professor Deepak Anand. Professor Deepak completed his MBA from the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning and later on Swami's guidance did his PhD on International Finance in 2004. Since then, he has been an assistant professor in the Department of Management Studies, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Prashanti Nilayam campus. This talk was delivered in the Satsang Hall on the 22nd of April 2018, and the topic for the talk is humility. Stay tuned, dear listeners, interspersed and after the talk, you'll be treated to some heartfelt music from the timeless album Sai Darshan by Srimati Kavita Subramanyam. And at 3:30 p.m. we have the live Telugu segment, Sri Sathya Sai Divya Sandesha Chari. With that, over to Professor Deepak Anand.
Om Shri Sai Ram and welcome. Today is study circle talk. And today we have taken the topic on humility. Humility, the need for humility, Swami's examples in humility, and the fundamental understanding, right, why it is important. We have heard Swami say innumerable times that ego is an acronym that means edging God out of your lives. Edging God out of your lives. So if you want to edge God out, then you can have ego. But if you want bring God into your life, then you need the opposite of ego, which is humility. Swami says, the real touchstone of knowledge is humility. As much knowledgeable you will become, so-called knowledgeable, quotes and quotes, as much humble you will become. When Einstein had discovered the unified theory, and he was being declared the greatest knowledgeable person in the world, the most intelligent person in the world, he was asked to give an address, and he was introduced as one of the greatest knowledgeable and intelligent person in the world. And Einstein was very clear and he said, I always feel like a small child playing with sand and pebbles on the seashore while the entire ocean of knowledge remains unexplored before me. This is Einstein telling, not you and me. Compared to him, we are only 1/1,000,000th of that intelligence and knowledge. As a human being, he was declared as the most knowledgeable person. And what did he say? He says, I feel like a small child playing with sand and pebbles and seashells on the seashore while the whole ocean of knowledge remain unexplored before me. In the Roman Empire, Socrates was declared to be the person of greatest wisdom. And when he was asked, Socrates, what is the source of your wisdom? How people say that you are the person with greatest knowledge and wisdom? He said, it is only because I know that I don't know. I know that I don't know. That is why they call me a man of wisdom. But we think that we know when we don't know. And we become egoists. I know so much. I have so much of experience behind me. I have seen life. What have you seen in life? You have lived a very fraction of the completeness and wholesomeness of this consciousness, which is existence around us. We have experienced not even a millionth and a millionth or a billionth of that fraction of the entirety of that consciousness and its innumerable, infinite ways of manifestation. How much have we experienced really? Small fraction, smallest, infinitely small fraction. And we feel, I know. There can be no greater foolhardiness foolishness, ignorance than this. Isn't it? Let us all see, it is not an opinion which is important. Please remember one particular fact, and all never forget that. Opinions will go on changing. Your opinion, somebody else's opinion, even some great man's opinion, they will all keep on changing. But opinions are never important. What is important? Fact based, which is experienced as knowledge. What is important? Fact. What is based upon experience, it becomes knowledge. A fact will never change. 2 plus 2 will always be equal to 4 in past, present and future. It will never change. But an opinion of who I am and who you are will keep on changing with time, place and circumstance. It has no validity in the span of time. What is invalid in the short term may become valid in the long term. May be desirable in the long term. In the short term, I have got a boil on my hand. And doctor says, we have to cut it out. Operation is required. A tooth has become very bad. Doctor says, pull it out. In the short term, all that operation, bleeding and all that is undesirable. Isn't it? Will anybody desire, please, for no reason cut my hand? Nobody will say that. But doctor will give you the advice. Hello, dear sister or brother, this boil, my opinion is, it should be removed. Otherwise, it will lead to spreading of the infection in the entire hand. And then you will say, okay, what is not desirable in the short run leads to something more desirable in the long run. Similarly, what is desirable in the short run may be very undesirable in the long run. Somebody's phone is there, I like it very much, I put it in my pocket. Very desirable in the short run. But after I go, I cannot get sleep. What if he gets to know? If somebody has seen, what if a police case becomes, what happened, what my parents will say, what the other people will say, oh no, 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 Baba. It becomes more of a inconvenience than a convenience. Isn't it? So what may be desirable in the short run may be undesirable in the long run. What is undesirable in the short run may be desirable in the long run. That is what Krishna says to Arjuna. Arjuna says, Lord, why should I wage the war? Why should I kill my grandfather, my teacher, my brothers, my all my relations? Why should I kill them? You are prodding me. Arjuna, Kaunteya, Utishta Jagrata, wage the war, kill these people. Millions of them. And Arjuna says, Lord, let us not kill them. Let us go to Himalayas and do meditation. Let us go to the forest and become recluse. Why should we kill all these people? Though they are foolhardy, though they are having no ethical and moral values, it is not our duty to kill them. Let us go away. Listen, Krishna says, no, 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 no. Kaunteya, no. It is not the correct attitude. You must do your dharma. What is dharma? Dharma is what is undesirable in the short run for a small group of people may be very desirable for the lot of people in the long run. This leadership of the Kauravas has become unethical, has become like a cancer to the society, right? And that is why this cancer needs operation. And Arjuna, I have taken retirement already. I will not raise up my arms. That is why I am taking voluntary retirement from this war. But you are the instrument I am going to use to do this operation on the society and remove the cancer of unrighteousness called Kauravas. It has become important now. There is no other way. Samadana Bheda, already over. Was doctor will, when you have got some problem, what will he say? First, Sama. Right? Meaning what? That you give good advice. Give good advice. Tell, don't eat this, eat this. Get up in the morning, do exercise. Then you don't agree to that. Then he'll give you incentive. Dana. Then he will say, if you do this, this will lead to good health. If you don't do this, this will lead to bad results. Then he will do bheda. He will advise your family members. He will do all that thing and tell, advise this foolish fellow. He is spoiling his own health. It is not good for him in the long run. All that has been done to the Kauravas. What is the last resort? After sama, dana, bheda, danda. You know the stick. Spare the stick and spoil the child, Swami says. Sometimes stick also is required. And then Krishna tells to Arjuna, Arjuna, we have done all that. We have given good advice. We have told them about the bad consequences of their actions. We have divided amongst their family, told one person's like Bhishmacharya, Dronacharya, given them good advice to advise Duryodhana, but nothing has happened. Now the last resort is what? Danda. That is why I am using you to remove this cancer of the unrighteousness called Kauravas from the society of the human beings. And that is why you must perform. That is your dharma. So are you on the same page? Right? So what may be undesirable in the short run may be very much desirable in the long run. And what may be desirable in the short run may be undesirable in the long run. Right? So we have, and that is why in the end Arjuna says, Krishna, now that I have seen your Virat Rupa, now that I know that you are all inclusive Godhead, all the fishes, birds, animals, humans, devas, danavas, pashus, pakshis, all are your forms only. I have seen this in this Vishwarupa, Virat Rupa. I have seen this, and that is why I understand, Krishna, in front of you, my mind has got no value. It is incomprehensible. A fish living in the ocean will never understand the climate on the Mount Everest, how much ever you make it understand. That is why better to have humility. And that is when Arjuna says, "Ha, Krishna, karishye vachanam tava. I will do what you say." And that is why if you look at the greatest of the scholars, greatest of the scientists, greatest of the politicians, greatest of the educationists, you will find one common trait in all of them. What is that? Humility. If a child is told, Vidya dadati vinayam, through vinayam only you can get vidya also. The opposite also is true. Without humility, you can have no knowledge. Can we have? When we went to class, the prep class, KG class, first class, some of our teachers are here from primary school. If you tell a child this is A, the child says no, why it is B? I will not agree to you. How do you know it is A? I will tell that it is C. Then can that child learn? It is impossible. The child, unless he has faith in the teacher's knowledge and believes in it and has the humility to accept, there is no way that the child can ever learn. And this particular aspect is also for us adults. As grown-up people, as spiritual people, as, you know, co-travelers on the spiritual path, we all have to have the greatest of the humility to learn what needs to be learned. Atma Vidya cannot be gained without having humility first. Because opposite of humility is ego. Today if you see all the problems in the world, all the conflicts, on the wars, all the atrocities, from where is it coming? It is coming only from ego of certain individuals, certain leaders, certain opinion makers in society. They are imposing their shallow and short-sighted opinions on the entire society. And sometimes society is either forced or misguided to follow them. Hitler had a particular theory, right? He said, this is the way that we should improve humanity. Whoever are weak, whoever are downtrodden, who are not intelligent, that class of people should be eliminated. They should be killed. Then the society will become a better society. And what did Mahatma Gandhi say and Buddha say? They said, by touching the fundamental core of the atmic reality of the individual, by our example of humility, we will be able to make every individual into a great individual. It is not by elimination. It is by transformation. It is not only by education that society will improve. It is by transformation, by the examples of leadership. That is what we will be able to transform the entire society. Is it not? What is Swami's example? Swami's example is example of extreme humility. I have never ever, and probably will ever never see a person as an individual more humble than Swami. More humble than Swami. Impossible to find. Once I was doing the lead role in the convocation drama, and we were all discussing, and there was a role given to a boy who was acting like my child, my son in the drama. But he was a very naughty child. He was very wayward. He is very arrogant. He will answer me back. He will in fact insult me in the drama. Though I was the hero of the drama and I was doing very good work in society and everybody was praising me, but when I came home, my son would literally disrespect me. So this drama was going on. We were having the rehearsals. But I was feeling, Swami, why this child has been given such a negative role? I don't know. There must be a reason for it. But as the lead role, I can't understand why this child needs to be so disrespectful to his own father, who is doing good work and is in a good position. He was the position of some chairman of the society. So one day, Swami called for the rehearsal. And this piece of drama, this particular act, where I come back home and there's an argument with my son and the son is disrespectful to me. That scene was enacted. After we all finished our acting in the interview room, all this will happen in the interview room. And Swami will call us and we will have scene by scene rehearsals. And Swami will correct each and every individual. He will set the hairstyle of every character. Right? The parting should be like this. Then he will tell the who's enacting as Bhima, hey, you should catch your robe not here, but here, because you are very strong and a strong character, very well-built body. You can't hold your hand below. You must wrap your robe and hold it on top, that it shows more power and valor in you. So Swami will micromanage everything, including drama, including the rehearsals, including the script, including the songs, including the background music, everything he will direct. And that is also a sign of great humility of the Lord. The director of the entire universe is taking so much of interest in directing a small petty drama on the convocation day before his birthday. Is that not a mark of his humility? Right? When we will go to Kodaikanal and this thing, Swami will himself, before we reach, he will reach an hour or so before us in his car, because we'll all be traveling in the bus. And then Swami will himself first go and inspect all the bathrooms. First he will go and inspect all the bathrooms and wash basins, and the all the beddings have been properly dusted or not. Are there any ants or cockroaches anywhere in the guest house? He will himself inspect. And if there is a need, he'll pick up the cleaner and start cleaning even the toilets himself and say, hey, you did not do it properly. It should be done the way I am telling you now. Swami taught us how to sweep the floor with a broom. Can you imagine? Swami gave a live demonstration. We were all brooming like this. Swami said, hey, ela chestunnavala, enta time padtaya neeku, bend chey. Then Swami bent down, lifted his robe, bent down, took the broom and then swept one big swipe and said, see, now you move forward. Then the next second swipe. Do it in alignment. Then all dirt will get cleaned properly. Otherwise, here dust is going from here to there, then coming back from here to there. This is not the proper way of this thing. Swami will show us how to wash the utensils and how they should be wiped clean after being washed. Swami said, if you do not wipe them properly, then stains will remain the next day. It will not look clean when the food is being served. Swami will teach us how to serve the food. Swami, one boy was serving the food and rasam was being served and he did not stir the rasam properly. And the solid part was below and the watery part was above. And Swami got absolutely angry and he said, Buddhi ledura, paina painu chestunnav, anta neel insert chestunnav, nu student kadu, nu stupid, buddhi ledu neeku. Meaning that you're serving only from the top, the watery part of the rasam will always come up. Unless it's stirred properly, the real taste will not come. That's why Swami says, you are not a student, you are like a stupid. That much common sense you don't have. That you're serving rasam, this thing, you have to stir it first and then you must do it. So Swami called this our group for Rama rehearsal. The scene was done and this boy had performed his role properly of insulting me in the drama. It was very well done by him. And we all sat down at Swami's lotus feet. Suddenly, I was sitting in the second row. Swami bent forward, came to the edge of his seat and bent forward and looked towards me. And he said, Deepak, this boy's role, I think, doesn't go well in the drama. If you feel it is all right, we will give this boy some other role. I was aghast. I said, Swami, whatever you say we will do, you are our God, Guru and guide. You are the director. I said, no. I must ask you first, because even your role is affected. I must ask you first, if you permit, then we will make the change, not otherwise. Said, Swami, please do whatever you want to do. Swami, we are your humble students and devotees. But Swami was not addressing me at that point in time as a student. He was addressing me as the main role in the drama. And being a director, as the role for director is that when he makes a major change in the drama, he must also ask the main characters, isn't it? So in that role also Swami exhibited a great, great deal of humility. Right? And I was aghast. I said, Swami, God is so humble, right? One day when you're finishing our MBA, and Swami said, what will you do? Swami, please give us opportunity to continue here, to do PhD. Swami, we want to serve you. Serve me. Swami said, I don't want any servants. I am servant. I am servant of my devotees. I am servant of the devotees. Swami said, my devotees are my masters. I stay at the doorstep of the hearts of my devotees, waiting to listen to the next command. I am the servant. That is what I like to be. You are all my masters, Swami. Swami said, no, Swami, how can it be, Swami? We are your devotees. We are your. Whatever you say, I listen. So I am the servant. But whatever I say, do you listen? You don't listen. You are the master. But I have been telling so many 50 years, 60 years telling, follow Satya, follow Prema, follow Satya, follow Prema. How much percentage have you followed? You don't follow because you feel you are the master. But I remain at the doorstep of your heart. And at that time I really melted. I said, Swami God, this is such a bad thing to do. That we devotees are keeping you at our doorstep. That means what? Our hearts are filled with so many worldly desires that there is no place for God to sit. Is that the way we treat our most loving God? Who's 1,000 mothers put into one? That he has to keep standing at the doorstep of the heart of his devotees and he's never invited inside. We invite him only to fulfill our desires, only pay passing orders. Swami, go get this done for us. Swami, this is not happening. Please get it done. When will we make him the resident of our own hearts? That is a question that I think we should all ask ourselves. Because when Swami comes inside, Swami would always say, your hearts are single seat sofas. Either the poison of the worldly desires can stay there or the nectar of Swami's presence can stay there. You cannot mix both. You cannot mix both. And that is why we need to clear out our worldly desires and bring Swami into our heart as a permanent resident. That is true humility, isn't it? That we surrender to God. Is that not humility? What is the greatest form of humility? Surrender to God. Because God is exhibiting humility in every aspect of his life. Every aspect. One Swami took us from Vrindavan and brought us back to Puttaparthi. We were all enjoying Swami's presence after Kodaikanal trip in Vrindavan. And Swami was calling us to Trai sometimes, giving us an opportunity to sometimes dine with him, sometimes to swing the jhula, and Swami would sit there and we were having a very beautiful time. At that time, painting work was going on in Puttaparthi. And Swami one day said, hey, I have to go to Puttaparthi. You all also come along with me. Oh, we were very happy. The next day early morning we started in the convoy with Swami. And the moment we came here, on the way Swami gave us so many snacks to eat, including chaklis, nibatlus and sweets and tetra packs and everything else. We were all having, you know, a lot of snacks on the way with Swami. Because Swami will call our car close by and then he will from the window to window transfer. There will be transfer of snacks and then we will have it and then we will again follow Swami. After some time again we will be called to come closer, we will again come close. Swami will transfer some snacks to our car and again we will follow Swami. Like that we were all enjoying eating on the way as, you know, following Swami's car. The moment we came here, that time Swami was living in the Purnachandra, not in the Yajur Mandir. And there's, you know, the dining, the whole place actually is a long kind of an alley and there is a very less, width is very less. So in Swami's dining hall also, the table is right in the corner. You can say this particular corner and then there are chairs on all the sides. Now because we are many of us, I took the chair right in the corner on the two walls. I was the last seat. There's another boy here. Then in the front there were some tables kept with all the casseroles and other items for serving. And Swami was observing, all of us were being served. So we were all given the first round of serving. And in that there was chapati and curry and everything else. And dal. So, you know, North Indians are a little more favorite to chapatis than to the rice. Chapati was very tasty. I thought probably if I get more it will be nice. I was looking at the casserole. Will somebody serve one more chapati? Swami looked towards me and rushed towards the chapati. Chapati casserole even before the cook could reach there. He rushed. And then Swami held the casserole in his hand. And then came all the way. And there were now one boy who was sitting in the corner. And there is wall behind. And there is no space in the front. Because there are other boys sitting in the front side. Now how will Swami come to the back? This boy was trying to pull his chair. He offered that, Swami, please give me the casserole. I will pass on the chapati. Swami said, no. I should only serve. It is my duty, Ra. Swami told this boy, hey, you cannot serve. It is my duty. Because you all come to my house. Right? If you need something, I should only serve. Like that, when Swami will go to the interview room, Swami will open the door for us. And Swami will close the door behind. Swami will switch on the light and the fan. Swami will go and get some, squash or some other things for us to eat and drink. We will try to get the tray from Swami. Swami will never give it. It is my duty to serve, Swami will say. Right? And then, after that, the cook will come and take the empty glasses. He will never allow us to do that. And that is the greatest example of humility. Now, how would Swami squeeze through? Right? This boy is trying to pull his chair front, but it is not moving because there is a table in front. And there are other boys sitting in the front side. Unless all of them move and table moves forward, he cannot move forward. Now, how much space is there between his chair ending and the wall? Only around 6 inches. After trying enough, only 6 inches gap is there. 6 to 7 inches. Can somebody pass through 6 to 7 inches? Very difficult. But just imagine holding the casserole in one hand. Swami squeezed through that 6-7 inches, came to me and served me a chapati on the plate. Then holding, balancing the casserole in one hand, squeezed back in the 6-7 inches and went and kept the casserole in the right place. That is the mark of humility. Right? God has everything at its command, isn't it? What if Swami tells somebody, hey, you do it. Will somebody mind? They will take it as an opportunity, isn't it? But no, Swami wants to set the right example for all of us to follow in our lives. That humility is the basis of divinity, because humility is the opposite of ego, that is edging God out of our lives. And that is why every point in time, every aspect of Swami has been an example in supreme humility. If you look at the lives of all the avatars, from the Matsya avatar to Bhagwan Baba, if you see one common stream in Buddha, Jesus, all the avatars, all the great devotees of God, what do you find there? None of them, look at the Vedas and the Upanishads. Tell me, Who has authored them today? Tell me who has authored them. Did somebody have the desire to put their names and stamp on it and says, Chandogya Upanishad authored by, and qualifications below, as we do in our business cards. We put our name, big stamp of qualifications below that, and we, anybody ask or not, we keep on giving. Yeah, take my visiting card, see how many qualifications are there. But all the Vedas and Upanishads for thousands and thousands of years, they have stood the test of time, and today, even today, guiding the entire humanity, not only in India, but everywhere in the world. Who has authored them? Did anybody ever put their name there? Never. So the example of all the gods, all the avatars, all the great sages is that of supreme humility. Let us imbibe in every aspect of our life. Sometimes circumstances will be such that we may face adversity, we may face some difficulties, we may face some roadblocks, we may face some conflicts. Right? Humility does not mean that you have to become like the carpet for somebody else to clean their feet every time they're passing by. No, it is not like this. Humility does not mean weakness. The greatest sign of strength is forbearance. Right? A humble person will always have forbearance.
गगरिया आए भर भर विभूति गगरिया Thursday Live. Stay tuned.
In the Jain tradition, we say that the greatest victorious being is Mahavira. Is Mahavira. Why is called Mahavira? Because we say he is the most valorous one. What has he conquered? Which war has he won? No war outside. He has won the inner war. He has won the inner war. He has foregone of all temptations from within, made himself empty of all desires, and that he has won the inner Mahabharata. That is why he is called Mahavira. I may have the power to punish you, but I bear it in silence. He is a Mahavira. He is a really the strong one. He is really the valorous one. When Mahavira was going in the jungle doing his meditation, an ignorant person, he was in deep meditation, and that forest man, ignorant, right, and an arrogant person, he said, are you deaf? Can't you hear me that I am calling you? And Mahavira was in deep meditation. He put a stick through his one ear and took it out through the other. If Mahavira wanted, he would have cursed him to become ashes in a moment's time. But did he do that? He did not do that. He just forgave him. He just forgave him instantly. That is why you may have the power to punish, but you develop the power of forbearance. That is true humility. That is true humility. Buddha knew that this person is going to give him poisonous food. Right? But he still accepted it, still having the knowledge that this is poisonous food, it should be avoided. Even as a small child, when somebody fed poisonous vada to Swami, because Swami used to call her the mother, right? Though she was totally against Bhagwan, and she conspired against Bhagwan, and she gave Swami poisonous vadas. If you read Chittam Chiyam Sundaram part 1, you will know this particular instance. Swami accepted those particular vadas and ate them and came back home, and his body turned blue. And then Swami vomited them out and cleansed his system, and he was hale and hearty again. Look at the example of Shirdi Baba. All the people would call him Pagal Fakir, a mad mendicant, and throw stones at him. There was one particular devotee whom Swami saw in Vrindavan, and he called him to stay with him for a long time, nearly for 2 years' time. And Swami showered his blessings and grace upon him in infinitely, and in such ample measure, people were surprised. Suddenly, who is this particular person Swami loves so much and he wants him to stay with him? Who is this particular person? But this person was not very correct in his dealing and things, and he made some mistakes. After 2 years' time, Swami asked him to pack his luggage and get out. Then somebody asked, Swami, suddenly out of the blue moon, you shower so much of blessings upon him. And suddenly you ask him to go. What is the secret behind this? Swami said, when I was in Shirdi Sai Avatar, when people were throwing stones at me one day, he stood in front of me and says, he is not a madman, he is a great being, he is, don't throw stones at me. He kept me in his house for 2 days. I had to repay back to him in ample measures for the 2 days of stay in his house by making him to stay with me in all comfort, with all grace for more than 2 years' time. I cannot keep any debts. I cannot keep any debts. That is the mark of the great people. Though they may have the greatest of the powers, though they may be controlling the universe, what can Shirdi Baba not do? What can Shirdi Baba not do? He is the humblest of the humblest. One day on the 16th of June, after I joined my MBA course, I was feeling very bad because I used to visit Shirdi Sai Baba temple every day in Lodhi Road. It was next to my Institute of Cost and Works Accountants where I was doing my preparations. And after I came here, after Swami blessed me with an MBA seat, after waiting for 6 years' time, I was feeling very bad and disturbed because I could not see both Shirdi Sai Baba because the temple is in Lodhi Road in Delhi, and I could not see Parthi Baba because he was still in Vrindavan. And there were everyday rumors about Swami's coming, Swami's coming, Swami's coming, but Swami was never coming. So I was feeling very bad. I said, Swami, Shirdi Sai, at least I could get this sucker by looking at your beautiful idol and, you know, people praying, bowing down, offering garlands, offering, you know, beautiful robes to you and, you know, singing songs and various kirtanas and the aartis at Lotus Feet. It was so amazing to have your darshan at least in the Shirdi Sai temple. But I'm missing that, and Bhagwan Baba, I don't know when he will come. Please, please, please come and give me sucker. So on 16th of January, as we finished our evening bhajans in the dining hall, and we were all asked to move, vacate the dining hall because that time they will put all the mats for dinner to be served. So there will be a 5 to 6 minutes gap between ending of the bhajans and the starting of the dinner. In that time, all of us will be asked to go out, and most of the boys will go to the Hillview Stadium to take a one round of walk, then they will come back when the bell rings. Even along the other boys, even I started going out of the hostel. The moment I went out of the hostel, on the opposite side, on the road, on the farther side, that time there was no indoor stadium, but on that side, farther side, I saw Shirdi Baba going in flesh and blood. And for a moment, my breath stopped. I said, God, Bhagwan himself is walking on the road. But then I said, if I go and run and catch his feet, how will other students feel? They will feel that this fellow is a madman. Just joined for MBA from outside, he's some crazy fellow. Some beggar may have dressed up like Shirdi Baba and then, you know, maybe walking on the road, just go running and catch somebody's feet means he look very odd, isn't it? So I also restrained myself. So all of us walking inside the inner road and Shirdi Baba was walking on the outer road. He was looking towards me with eyes so filled with glamour and light, I was sure that he is Shirdi Baba himself. Because once earlier also had given me darshan physically when I was in Delhi. So as Shirdi Baba is walking towards Puttaparthi and I am walking on the inner lane near the Ishwaramma roadside. Now everybody has turned towards Hillview Stadium and I am, Shirdi Baba are alone on opposite sides of the road. I am on the inner road, he is on the main road outside. I said, okay, when the Ishwaramma this roads end, then it will meet the main road again. So I will jump and I will go and catch Baba's feet. And the moment I lost sight of him on the pillar of the gate, I ran with full speed. Being an athlete, I ran with full speed, but he had vanished. But he had vanished. And he was still walking. He had reached the first gate of the college around 200 meters farther away in that 1 second, 2 seconds. And he was still going towards Puttaparthi, looking back still. With tattered robes, the jhola on his shoulder, and walking away towards Puttaparthi. And then I was wondering, who am I? Who am I that the Lord of the universe should take the trouble to walk barefoot on the roads to Puttaparthi and just to give an assuring darshan to one devotee and says, hey, you think I am only in the temple? You think I am only in the temple? Here I am. I am everywhere. Wherever you call to me with devotion, wherever you call to me with your full heart, I will manifest. When you yearn, you will earn. And you will yearn, you will earn. And when you yearn with a humble heart full of devotion, Swami has to give you the blessings. There can be no other way. There can be no other way. There can be no other way. In the darshan time also, sometimes we'll, as students, we'll play games with Swami. And we will say, Swami, I will hide behind the pillar. Can you search for me? Today my turn is not there to sit in the front. Because class by class there'll be turns. Today, Swami, my turn is not there. I'm sitting far away in the fourth block. Swami, you never come this side. But Swami, I'm praying to you with all my heart. Swami, I'm praying to you with all my devotion, with my love. Swami, please come close to me. Find an excuse to come close to me and give me your darshan from close quarters. And invariably, Swami will come. Invariably, Swami will come. And that is why if we leave our egos, if we leave our useless thoughts of that we are great in some way. In what way can we be great? Who are we really in comparison to the entire universe? We are nobody. We are nobody. Please look at the structure of the universe once and you will understand that Milky Way galaxy with billions of stars is like a small dust particle on the sands of this universe. If the Milky Way galaxy with billions of stars is like a dust particle, what is our, what do we have really that must cause ego? But if you remember God with completeness of devotion and surrender, and we stop demanding and asking, many of us have the habit of guiding Swami. Swami, you should do like this. Swami, please don't do like this. Swami, you should better harm him. Swami, better take care of this particular one. Hare, are we to advise Bhagwan? Who are we really? What is our understanding? Right? But we think we are with the greatest advisories of Bhagwan. We should tell him what he should do. So when my father was here and mother was still in Delhi, and I was a little scared because the locality that we were staying in Delhi, she was living alone there and there was no neighbors. And many instances of, you know, robbery and all that happened. So I was very scared. So I told Swami one day, I was keeping a letter and said, Swami, mother, Swami knows everything. A letter is only an opportunity. Said, Swami, mother, oh, Delhi letter, put stamp and have it sent. Said, Swami, it's for you. He said, no, not for me. I don't need letters. Then Swami asked, where am I? Now Swami is standing right in front of me. What do I tell Swami? where are you? Said, Swami, you are everywhere. That's the only logical answer that you can give. I said, Swami, you are everywhere. Swami said, correct answer. But I truly live in the depths of your heart. That means what? The depths of all our hearts. The true head office of God is where? It is not even in Prashanti or Vrindavan or Kodaikanal or Satyam Shivam or Sundaram. The Swami says the real head office where I truly live is the depths of your heart. And Swami said, leave your prayers with me in the depths of your heart. Don't say, don't give letters, no need. You have crossed that stage, or you better cross that stage. No need to give letters and tell. You have prayer. You know where God truly is. Depths of your heart. Where should you leave your prayers? Where God truly is. And He's in the depths of your heart. And Swami says, if you ever have to pray, only pray. Samasta lokaha sukhino bhavantu. Samasta lokaha sukhino bhavantu. Samasta lokaha. And Swami says, you know why? Because the universe is my body. The whole universe is my body. And when you pray, samasta loka sukhino bhavantu, I also react and respond, sukhino bhavantu, sukhino bhavantu. Basically, what we get in lifetimes is only a reflection of what we pray, what we think. If we pray samasta loka sukhino bhavantu, samasta loka also will pray sukhino bhavantu for us. But if we keep on having negative thoughts, curse the world, be to hell, this thing, that thing, what is the response from the universe? Hell. And the hell, when hell gets created, are how hell came into her life? Why? Because you're talking about hell all the time. You created your own hell. Even today, the doctors, they advise, they did a research, and they said, those particular patients with same diseases, one of them are asked to imagine that they have become healthy and running about in the garden, in their backyard. Other were asked to imagine that you are very sick and you will die soon. Dramatic difference in the effect of the medicine. Same medicine was administered. Those who were thinking, oh, I am already cured. I am running about in these streets. I am playing with children in the garden. Oh, I am going to work as a normal person. I am cured. That person became cured much faster. And with less medicines in a shorter span of time. And the person who thought, I am becoming more and more sick. I don't know when the cremation will happen. After my death, who will take care of my property? Those people died faster. Naturally, yad bhavam tad bhavati, isn't it? Right? So Swami says, do not have any such feeling. Always think positive, positive, positive. And the first mark of humility is, please learn to forgive yourself. Be humble. Being humble means what? It's like a net that the ego casts around us. If you are humble means what? Like a small fish, you will escape from the net. Humility is the escape from the net of Maya. There was a particular fisherman, and every day he will come to a beautiful big pond, and he will cast his net, and many fishes will get caught. But there was one fish, which will never get caught. So all the young fishes went to say, Master, oh, you are a great master fish. Please tell us. Everybody gets caught. Many of our family members have got caught, but you always escape. How do you escape? The master fish said, stand between the legs of the fisherman. You will never get caught. You will never get caught. When Markandeya was to be cast the net by the Yama, he held on to Shivalinga. And then the net was cast on Shivalinga, Shiva himself. And Shiva came and said, hey Yama, I'll burn you to ashes. How dare you cast your cast of death on me? I was not on you, Lord, and this fellow. But this fellow has taken refuge in me. You can't touch him now. Once he has taken refuge in complete humility at my lotus feet, you cannot cast the net of death also on him. He's saved. Once my father, whose lifespan has been extended by Swami, I can tell you that. Swami came to his dream and said, come to the Kulwanth Hall at 2:30 in the afternoon. Swami would come around 4:30. So he got up. He had just gone to sleep after his lunch. Swami came to his dream, come at 2:30. That time he had a fracture. So he was traveling on wheelchair. So he wheeled himself to the Kulwanth Hall and said, please give me a place. I want to sit. Then the person who's there, he's telling, sir, why so early? I mean, 4:30 is still a lot of time. You can come at 4 o'clock now. Said, no, I have come inside Kulwanth Hall now itself. Said, okay, sir, you are having a wheelchair. Please park yourself wherever you would like and sit in one corner till Swami comes. So he thought probably today Swami will call him for an interview or, you know, will bless him in some special way. Swami came around 4:30, didn't even look at him. Had gave darshan. He said, okay, certainly on the way back he will look at me. Swami didn't look at him even then. Swami went back. And he's wondering, why Swami called me at 2:30, very clear dream he gave me in the afternoon time. I was happily sleeping and said, orders, not request, orders. Hey, come to Kulwanth Hall at 2:30. So anyway, he went back and that time night, the same night he had a dream. In the dream he's standing he's on his wheelchair and he's in the Kulwanth Hall. Suddenly, Lord Hanuman appears next to him and he hears Swami's command. To Hanuman, make sure 2:30 does not happen for him. Make sure 2:30 PM should not happen for him. So 2:30 PM, I don't know what was supposed to happen. Some untoward instance, some problem, right? And Swami said, see, 2:30 should not happen for him. And so Hanuman started becoming bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And Lord's son is traveling. Hanuman puts his hand and says, no, wait. This fellow's life has to be saved. You can't make 2:30 for him. And then Hanuman became smaller and he went to the same Rama and Hanuman temple where they used to daily pray when living in Delhi, in their own locality. And he got merged into the idol. When he got up in the morning, he thought of only one thing. Yes, my lifespan has been extended by Swami. At that day, 2:30, when I was humbly waiting for Swami in the Kulwanth Hall, death could not even touch me. Even death could not touch me. It may have happened, it may not have happened. I do not know what was supposed to happen. But Swami gave him clear instruction. Come, 2:30. Under the Kulwant hall, death will not be able to touch you, because my grace will be there. Somebody asked Swami, Swami, why have you painted this entire Kulwant hall roof with parrot green and gold color? Swami said, see, I give gold and green rings to many of my devotees, a mark of my grace and protection, but I can't give it to everyone. Anybody who comes under this particular roof will get the same protection. Anybody who comes and sits under this particular roof will get the same protection as I give to my devotees by giving them the green and diamond ring. So how much grace, how much grace, how much grace. As much humble we are, as much we surrender ourselves to God, as much place we make for God to enter into our lives, and as much ego, as much edging of God we do in our lives, as much God goes away from our lives. So the path to Swami is very simple. The path to Swami is the path of humility. I do not say don't have the power. You have the knowledge, you have the position, you have the power, but you will find that every great leader is the most humblest of the all. Look at the great generals of military in India. They would know the lowest man working in the kitchen by their name. When Krishna was told, we will do this Rajasuya Yajna, what's going to be your duty? Krishna, what will you do? Duryodhana has taken the responsibility of giving away gold to people. He says, I will not touch anything else except gold. That is my responsibility. He said, oh, okay, I don't want any such responsibility. When people have eaten, I will pick up the used plates. That will be my duty. In the war, the Mahabharata war, what duty was Krishna's? The lowest, the charioteer who has to clean the horses and put them into the chariot and feed them, lowest, or clean the dung, all these jobs, then I will do this particular job. In the earlier days, Swami would himself with his own hands feed people, serve them food, give them prasadam, give them vibhuti, give them his photographs. He will himself do all the jobs. In Vrindavan, many of the students will tell us, we'll see Swami from our hostel, Swami's window will be there and Swami will be cleaning, brooming his room. And because he cannot go for a walk outside in the evening, Swami will be walking up and down in his room for a long time. Right? So that is the example of greatest humility that Swami has shown to all of us. Let us follow that. Let us follow that example. Let us not have the false feeling of knowledge, of position. We are nothing in comparison to God. And when we have seen that God is extremely humble, who are we to have, and what is the basis for us to have any kind of ego? Why take ownership of anything that you may have done? Nothing is done by you. You have just been made an instrument to accomplish something. But you should be absolutely humble and offer it to God. And even waiting and doing nothing is being a good instrument of God. Somebody came to Swami and said, Swami, please give me a job in the ashram, Swami. I would like to be your instrument. Swami said, oh, you want to be my instrument? Then don't do anything. He said, why, Swami? Swami said, see, a surgeon, when he goes for the operation, he may have 100 instruments for the operation. But depending upon the need and requirement of the patient, he will choose one or two instruments. But all the other instruments should also be ready, for if there is any complication or need, they should be ready. You should not say, Lord, you never told us that you need us. That is why we are all rusted and wasted and we'll be saying, no. All the instruments should be ready. Though you may not be used at that point in time, you should be humble enough to wait and have the patience. Shraddha and Saburi. Have the complete faith in the surgeon and wait for your turn when your need arises. That is the quality of a good instrument of God. Right? When the opportunities arise, please do go and serve. When the opportunity is not there, please don't disturb all the systems by jumping in unnecessarily. Let the best person do the job. Right? You have been made, you have your past, you have your future, you have a task to fulfill in this life. Make sure that you complete that with complete humility. As much humble you will be, as much you will rise. Be like the water. Water may be the most humble. You know what? Look at water. It may flow from the Mount Everest. But what is the greatest source of water? The ocean. At the lowest, which is at the highest level, lowest level on this entire earth. The lowest level. Being the lowest level, it accumulates all the water from all the mountains into itself and becomes the greatest. Why? It's the humblest. It is considered itself the lowest, and that is why it is the greatest. Without humility, no greatness can ever be achieved. And that is why we must have complete faith in Swami's word, Vidya Dadati Vinayam. You can make that person has got so much of knowledge depending upon how much humility he has. And as much humility you have, as much you'll be able to learn, assimilate and understand. An egoistic person will never be able to learn. Is it not? He'll be, when you're talking to an egoistic person, he's only thinking of how I can counteract him, how I can put him down, how I can, cancel his argument. He is not listening to learn. An egoist person will never be humble enough to be able to learn anything from anyone. That is why I'll end with a small episode which I love a lot. And there was a great master. He was very knowledgeable. He was a great jnani. And there was this particular disciple whom nobody could defeat in argumentation in the entire kingdom. So one day a minister comes to this particular master and says, "Master, your disciple, he's got such, skills of argumentation. Does he really know as much people say he does?" The question is, does your disciple really know as much as people say he does? Then the master laughed and said, "He's so busy in swallowing and vomiting of information. Where does he have the time to learn anything?" He is all the time swallowing and vomiting information on others. Where is he? Unless he has the humility, can we really learn? Because learning is learning of the facts, not opinions. Of the facts based upon experience. That only can be called knowledge. Knowing the reality, the truth of the Atmic, your reality, based upon experience. That alone is the knowledge. Everything else is only information. It can help you in transformation if you put it into practice, not otherwise. So let us be wise and not otherwise. Thank you very much for your patient listening. Sairam.
प्रेम जलाई लो अब तो आओ।